I think the simple truth for tonight, if we were going to summarize the talk, would be Jesus be the center. I'm glad that Todd went there. It wasn't on the sheet, and I like that. And I think that for us to have a successful marriage, and I know that's a big word, we haven't used that one like right out there yet. I just sort of launched that out with no warning tonight, sorry. Some of you are like, oh my gosh, is that why you brought me here? You know, Billy and I are going to be doing ceremonies at the end of this series, by the way, out in the rotunda. That'll be the last Monday night, Tuesday night in May. The hope of any marriage is really simple, and tonight the few things God wants to thrust forward in our thinking are not complicated things, but I think they're going to dial in our hearts. And for marriage to be successful, there has to be a recurring theme, not a I'm standing at the altar theme before God in the presence of these witnesses and, you know, then by the power invested in me, by the state of wherever and by Almighty God, I pronounce you, whatever God has joined together, let no man tear us. I'm not standing at the altar, Jesus be the center, but throughout the process, a renewing of that refrain. That's the only way marriage works. And I know marriage is a big word, and a lot of you are not thinking about marriage. Marriage is like way off in the distance somewhere, and you know, you're just thinking about trying to get a date for openers. And God's thinking, this is a big line. It's a big line of the night. I've been praying about it all day. God's thinking about your marriage right now. Now, I know some of you will say, and I had a great conversation with someone last week, you know, everybody doesn't have to be married. The New Testament talks about people who may be called out to be single. We're definitely embracing that understanding. But for the vast majority of us in the building tonight, God's thinking tonight about your marriage. Now, I know you may have been thinking about it today. Maybe you're one of those kind of people, and you're way out there, even as a high school student, you know, thinking about it. And maybe you are in a relationship that you're about to have the talk, you know, and or one of the talks. Maybe it's the talk before the big talk, but it's one of the leading up to the big talk talks. Or maybe it's the first talk. Maybe it's the DTR talk. I don't know kind of where you are in your talks. But, you know, it's in the hopper and you're thinking, you know, is this possible? And maybe some of you and you've passed by the window of opportunity that you always thought was going to be in your blueprint. And so the thought for you is it still going to happen? Can it happen? When is it going to happen? And a lot of you have said, oh, that's the farthest thing from my mind. And that's an okay thing if it is out of your mind, but I want you to know tonight it's in God's mind. In the present culture, notwithstanding, marriage is a really big fat deal to God. And it matters more to Him than I think you or I imagine. And even though all of Him is more than enough for all of me, for every thirst and every need, and even though in the Garden of Eden, Adam hung around with God. Now, if there was ever a moment for men to rise up and stake our claim, that was going to be it right there. We were running the universe. I mean, not really, but He was sort of letting us, you know, call some shots and name some stuff. And we were in the garden with Him, and it was us and God. I mean, you got, you know, male bonding going on. You got a perfect environment. And imagine that. I'm not trying to be funny. I mean, here's Adam and God in the Garden of Eden in paradise hanging out together, and that wasn't enough for God. And yes, it was true of Adam, all of me is enough for you, Adam, for every thirst and every need. And as long as we hang out in this garden, all of me is enough for all of you. But that's not my complete plan for you. My plan for you is to make this broad statement: a suitable helper for you has not yet been found among all the animals we've inventoried so far. And I am going to make for you a suitable helper so that even God Himself in a manifested presence in the garden with Adam was not enough. And in God's mind, there was something called, uniting together. There was something called joining forces. There was something called two becoming one. We call it marriage, and it was in God's mind, not after the fall, not as a result of things went wrong, so now we have to figure out how to do it differently. Before the fall, before it all went wrong, God said, you need a woman, and it's going to be the two of you joined together permanently, eternally, not eternally, but permanently on this earth anyway, in holy matrimony. And it matters to God. The culture is so whacked out and so messed up. Are you watching this show, The Bachelor? Anybody? How many of you are watching The Bachelor? Can I just join in here? 7, that's good. That's about what I think the ratings are. It's like the most watched show in America, and we got 7 people watching it. The premise of this show is that Alex, bless his heart, if you don't know Alex, he's kind of a cross between JFK Jr. and Pete Sampras. It's my take on it anyway. And somehow they got him in a Malibu setting. I mean, it's totally like your dates. I mean, you know, he's living in this pad in Malibu that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, and there are these 25 babes from all over America living in another huge Malibu mansion, and he gets to figure out which one he wants to marry. And we get to watch. Isn't that beautiful? So they started with 25 women, whittled it down to 8, then 4, then 3, and last night, poor Shannon got the boot. Now, Shannon's got some issues of her own, obviously, and the relationship wasn't going anywhere, but we've got it down now to, you know, it's coming down to the wire, not pushing anything, don't have anything at stake in it, but Thursday night, it's all coming down. Trista and Amanda are still in the running. And if you haven't seen any of this yet, I'm just trying to fill you in. For those of you who weren't the 7 who've seen it, this past week, Alex got to have overnight dates with the 3 finalists. So he took Amanda to New York. They cleverly edited the ending of their date with them in a suite in the hotel room ordering what I think I remember them calling sex in the sheets dessert. He took Shannon out skiing. I don't remember where, somewhere where it was snowing. They had a horrible time. That's what I remember about it. And then he took Trista to the big island of Hawaii. Then they all reconvened at the Malibu mansion, and he extended an invitation to Trista and Amanda to keep going forward in this little episode, and Shannon got the limo ride to the airport. On Thursday, Alex is going to ask one of these 2 women that he's just had overnight dates with. Actually, there were 3 of them, but of the 2 left. And of the, let's say, 20 women that he's been pretty full-on kissing for the last couple of weeks on television and other things we don't know about that haven't been shown, he's going to ask one of these 2 women if they'd like to marry him. Oh, now they are fully empowered, and they can say, no, I really don't want to marry you, thank you, I'm the last one standing. I mean, kind of just a little dynamic here. You put 25 women in a house together in Malibu, and one of them gets to win something? Man, this has been cutthroat stuff, I'm telling you. That's what I've been watching. I've been learning a lot about, you know, what happened while we were asleep. I mean, I've been trying to figure this thing out. I'm not sure any of them are interested in Alex, but I know every one of them wants to beat the other 24 women in that deal out of the deal. I don't know if anybody cares about him or not, and I'm not so sure one of them's not going to come to the end and go, no, I really don't want to marry you. I really honestly don't like you. I just wanted to know that I was the top over all these other women in this house. Thank you very much. It's been nice being here with you. That might be a fun ending, but the guy's going to ask somebody to marry him, for crying out loud. I know I've gone on and on about it. What is wrong with our culture? That God himself has established a holy union between a man and a wife. And we've got a guy, and this is my thing with it. This is my whole deal. I don't know where along the way I got hooked into the process, but I'm just watching as a sociological study. That's kind of my rationalization. Does that sound pretty good? I'm looking for sermon material. I'm trying to, you know, fill in the blanks in the boy meets girl thing. I'm sitting there going, okay, bro, here's the way I'm seeing this. You are going to marry potentially one of these two girls, at the end of which this thing's going to be on reruns on Fox somewhere along the way, and you're going to be sitting at home with her watching the reruns of you mugging with all these other women and who knows what with the other stuff that went on, and that's going to be a massive uniting moment for your marriage. God has elevated marriage far above anything our culture has comprehended. And the three things I think he wants to put in our thinking tonight are simply these. One of them is a little bit of a look backwards to last week in the garden. And it is this, that God has created order for our relationships and for marriage. And you and I have the opportunity to either embrace that order or to erase that order. And watching The Bachelor the last few weeks, I think the culture is trying to erase the order. Big time. God set it up. And the way he set it up was that the man came first and the woman came second, that God created both of them, but God created the man and then he made for him a suitable helper. God did not make the man the ruler over the woman. He made the man, hello, the leader for the woman. And so, men, it's not for us to sit back and go, man, I'm looking for, you know, a little wife, you know, I'm going to get me a wife and I'm going to rule my kingdom, man. I'm going to set up shop and I'm going to just have total authority and I'm going to get one of those big chairs you get when you get married and I'm going to sit in it and I'm going to just rule the kingdom from there. God did not create that kind of order. It wasn't, man, you came first and you're the big cheese and you'll rule over all the other things that I create. It was, man, you come first, but you're not the ruler of the woman. You are the leader of the woman. And I believe it's true. All of the ranting and raving aside, I think every woman on planet Earth wants probably more than anything else to be led. For someone to come alongside of them and say, you know what? I've detached from home. I've stabilized. And I'm moving forward. And this is where I think God is leading me. Would you consider helping me get there? It's not that the wife was created to be the servant to the man. That's not God's economy. So we got man ruling everything and women serving, you know, and doing all the stuff. And that's what every argument comes back whenever the Bible comes into the equation, whenever Christianity comes into the equation. If it's on that some of these idiotic things that are on television, and as soon as they get some Christian there and he's going to speak up and everybody's like, yeah, and what's the very next line? It's if they have it that way and God's way, all the women will be cooking barefoot in the kitchen and having babies and, you know, washing the clothes, and the man will be, you know, running the shop and doing the stuff and out with his buddies. And that's not God's picture at all. God said, I want to bring you a helper, not a servant. A helper, not a slave. Someone to assist you in the mission that I am giving the two of you for your lives together. And in that economy, God has set forth a picture for you and me. There's just a little byline here that I want to throw out just in case you're not connecting the dots already. And when this is a different series, one that we did a few years back as well. But God created the man and the woman. He did not create a man and a man. And he didn't create a woman and a woman. He created a man and a woman to be compatible sexually, physically, emotionally, in every way. And he established order for our lives. There are a lot of people who have tried to erase God's order. And they've said, no, you can do this a lot of different ways. And God has said, well, you can try to do it a lot of different ways, but the goal for me is a holy union And I have determined, I am creator. I have decided how best to make it happen. And so tonight the first thing is we want to just embrace God's order. I know that seems like a very silly place to start. And some of you are going, oh great, you know, thank you very much for telling me that. I mean, I got that already. You'd be very surprised how many people are with us tonight that are wrestling with that. And they're wrestling with the economy of God. Women with women, men with men, women with more than one man, men with more than one woman, people trying to cleave before they leave, treat people trying to put the end result in front of the equation and in the middle of the equation, outside of the equation, people trying to figure out ways to do it on their own. And God is saying, I am the one who has created relationship, and I've created a certain order and a certain economy. And the first step for you to have a marriage that lasts and endures is to have God at the center of it, but in the same way to embrace God's economy. Shelly and I have been out of town, and we've been staying at a hotel. And in our hotel, it's a pretty nice place. And they have the little mini bar thing in the room. You know what I'm talking about? So in case you're hungry, you can get, you know, a bag of potato chips for about $9 and Coke for $5.50. If you're too lazy to go down to the little Coke machine down the hall where they're $1, you can get one right out of your refrigerator for $4. And this one's pretty jacked up. I mean, they've got a disposable camera there. It's kind of nice. So if you're going to be out seeing the sights of the city and forgot your camera, they got one for you right here. And had some kind of cool gourmet stuff. We checked in the other night. I had a little snack picnic thing, which was those little round cheeses and some of that sausage stuff that's probably bad for you. But it was kind of nice. And it was late, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever. I'm eating it. So we ate it. But while I'm digging around and rummaging through the snacks on the deal to see what's available, I find the intimacy kit. Now, that was new for me. I've stayed in a lot of hotels in my life. I travel a lot. Shelly and I stay places all the time. We stay in a lot of places that have, you know, the mini bar, and it's got all the stuff in there you could possibly want to eat and drink and have a great life. But I've never yet seen the intimacy kit. Maybe this looks like something that maybe you've seen it. Apparently, you've seen it. So I hadn't seen that yet. So hello, a little bit out of the scene here. And so I'm like totally like, checking that out. I'm like, what in the world is this? I think I know. I think I got an idea. I'm not like, you know, clueless, but I'm just checking it out. And this little thing, it's a little plastic case that pops open with a little lid on it. It's got a nice little sunset background, of course, with the intimacy kit in a nice, you know, kind of scripted font on the front. And it's got more stuff in a little bitty plastic thing than you can imagine. And I'm not going to list. I was going to bring it and read it off, but then I'd have had to pay for it, and that would have looked weird checking out, I'm sure. Because it was a big conference, and I pictured myself at the desk with a little, you know, visual aid for my talk and some friends of ours, you know, down the aisle checking out. And so we have you for the picnic snack and the intimacy kit from the mini bar. Is that right? And thank you very much, everybody. Yes. Room 1031 is where it was all going on. I'm having a trouble getting the thing out of the deal, so I'm just reading what is in there. And I thought I'll just have to write this down because I got, you're not going to believe what's in this little thing. But what they're selling is that intimacy is in there. That's what's in this little thing. I mean, if you guys made it up to the room tonight and you're thinking you want to get intimate, then we got the intimacy kit for you. Translation, if you put a condom on, then you can have intimacy. And God says, you know, you can erase that board all day long. But you can never change the order that I created. And it was after the man and the woman cleaved together, which translated means they decided to join forces permanently. Then they became one flesh. See, God is, he's not sitting on the sideline of the single culture going, I can ruin this for you like so royally. You can't have sex. You can't have intimacy. Nobody here can have any intimacy. I don't want you to have intimacy. Don't want anybody going out, you know, on the town, meeting people and hooking up. Because I just want to ruin your life. But what I'm telling you tonight is God's thinking about your marriage. And He's trying in every way that He knows how to preserve and protect your marriage. And He's doing it right now. See, He's not waiting until you get to the end of the aisle and you look at her and he looks back at you and you say, well, I do and you do. And then you go to the hotel and hopefully they'll have an intimacy kit there and then you can go for it. He's hoping that you'll look at her and she'll look at you and there'll be wonder still in your eyes. And when you get where you're going, you can be naked and not ashamed. That's what God's hoping for you. He's thinking about our lives. And He set in motion an order to help us get there. The second thing I want you to see tonight is this, that Jesus is the central figure of the garden. We're still way back in time here. We haven't revved all the way into present tense, you know, reality dating yet. We're still back with Adam and Eve. But in this garden scene, Jesus is the central figure in the garden. There's a passage we read last week, and I want you just to look at it really quickly with me. It's Genesis 3. It's a pretty amazing thought, and this is where the application part starts kicking in a little bit for us tonight. The title of the message tonight, by the way, and coming around it with the last third and not the first third, is pulling together or drifting apart. Because we're aiming for the kind of relationships that perpetually and continually over time grow stronger, not weaker, where the unifying force, the unity of joining as one, man and woman, becomes stronger, not weaker, and where the two people continue to grow towards each other and they don't end up drifting away from each other. And that's only possible if we embrace God's economy, and it's only possible if we understand that Jesus is the central figure in the garden. He emerges right on the scene. And here's where it happens. We know that Adam and Eve messed up pretty bad. They ended up getting a curse from God. There was a curse on the serpent. There was a curse on the woman. There was a curse on the man. They both got banned from the garden, and an angel was set at the entrance of the garden to make sure that they never entered again. God knowing that if they came in and ate from the tree of evil, that'd be bad news. If they ate from the tree of good, it'd be bad news. So they're banned now from the garden, off to do their lives on their own with hardship. And at the end of the day, before the whole thing comes down, verse 17, he says to Adam, he says, because you listened to your wife. That's an interesting phrase there. We'll come back to later. And ate from the tree about which I commanded you. You must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you'll eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you. And you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. And Adam named his wife Eve because she would become the mother of all the living. And verse 21, interesting little scenario here. We mentioned it last week. And the Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife, and he clothed them. Now that's a picture. That's a picture of God saying the whole plan here was for there to be intimacy, not only between the two of you, but between the three of us, God and Adam, God and Eve, Eve and Adam having an intimate relationship. God wanted to be right in the middle of it. He wanted to be a part of the whole thing. He wanted to be central in it all. Now all that's gone wrong. They're going to be banished from the garden, and it's going to be a long time before God can embrace and hug a human being again. It is going to be many, many years now until Christ comes and ultimately opens the doorway for us to come back to God. Oh, God's going to be with people through the Old Testament, but it's not going to be an intimate love affair. It's not going to be God indwelling them. It's going to be this power of God, this glory of God, this fire of God, this I'm God and you're not God, and finally Christ is going to come on the scene. He's going to ultimately die on a cross for the sins of the world and reorder this relationship with God. And this was a picture of it. When God came in the garden, he saw they were naked. He knew they were ashamed. It was pathetic, honestly. And so God killed an animal. He made skins for them. He said, put these on. You need to put these on. And it was a picture of the heartbeat of God for them and his intention to redeem them, to come for them, to come after them, and to buy them back by the death of his own son, so that once again, the intimacy that he wanted with them and with you could be possible. And that could become the starting point for intimacy between you and another person in life. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say something huge tonight. I am trying to say that the key, the core to you having a successful marriage and any successful relationships is your own relationship with God. And maybe you came second week in this series going, you know what, I've tried a bunch of stuff and it's not working. I'll listen to what this guy has to say. I mean, he's been married 15 years. He might know something. I don't know. I doubt it. But I'll check it out and see what's going on. And you're here going, I just came for kind of like, you know, give me an insight. Give me a tip. Give me some dating ideas. You know, just give me hope. That's all I'm looking for. Just speak hope to me. And all of a sudden now things are being reordered. And for some of you, you're sitting here tonight and it's just like, oh, that's the thing. It's not necessarily that there's something wrong with every man on earth. I mean, I said necessarily. I mean, still an option. I mean, all of us guys know where we stand, you know, but we're just asking for understanding. But it's not necessarily something wrong with every woman that's ever walked into your life. It may be that you are completely disconnected from Creator God. And as a byproduct of being disconnected from Creator God, you're missing the massive benefit of the cross of Jesus Christ. And what is the massive benefit of the cross of Jesus Christ? Here are the key words. Check them out. Forgiveness of sin. So you're not going into relationships carrying like a massive boatload of guilt with you. Don't you love dating somebody who's got a couple, three or four suitcases of guilt with them coming into the deal? And you go to pick them up and they ask you to pop the trunk. I mean, it is a bad deal, you know? And you're just thinking dinner, and they're thinking, oh, no, I got stuff, man. And then they're loading the trunk of the car, and it's getting a little heavier, and getting a roof rack, and, you know, it's all their stuff coming with them. But what if you could go into relationships knowing that you are free from the power and penalty of sin? That you've been washed by the forgiveness of Jesus Christ and restored now to God, not because you're religious or you went to church, but because you put your faith in the Son of God, and you are forgiven because of what Jesus did. That's a pretty important ingredient in a relationship. That you don't go into it tripping over guilt. And then tripping them out over your guilt. And then everybody's freaking out over everybody's guilt. But that you go into it going, I'm not perfect. And I'm still going to make many mistakes in my life. But I am forgiven because of the power of the cross of Jesus Christ. It's a pretty important word to carry into a relationship. And it's an essential word to carry into marriage. How about the word acceptance? How nice would it be if when the doorbell rings and the guy's there and he's looking good and he's styling, got all the stuff, got the flowers or whatever he's bringing, and the door opens and you say, hi, I'm accepted. I mean, start a date. Wow, that'd be amazing. He's like, well, hi, I'm Steve. Well, that's an interesting name. How'd you get that name? No, I'm accepted. I am not going on this date tonight to fill myself up with acceptance that comes from you. That's not why I signed up for this when you called. I have met the Creator through the cross of Jesus Christ, and that cross said, I am accepted by God. Not because of what I've done or what I've achieved or what I've been able to stack up good works. I'm accepted because God said, I love you, I want you. Since the garden, I've been pursuing you. And through the cross of Christ, I'm buying you back. You are mine and I choose you and accept you. And what if you open the door and say, hi, I'm accepted. And he says, wow, me too. That's a cool thing. I'm not going to have to stick my hypodermic needle of acceptance into you all night and suck you dry of every ounce of acceptance you can possibly give me. Am I okay? Am I okay? Am I okay? Tell me I'm okay. Please hold me and tell me I'm okay. I need to know that I'm okay. And I'm not going to do the same to you. This is not going to be a mutual acceptance date. There's going to be a day that two people walking down the road because of the cross of Christ and the person of Jesus going, isn't it cool to know that if it doesn't work out, and it might not, had a nice beginning, accepted, nice to meet you, had a nice beginning, but maybe it just didn't work out. Maybe, you know, he burped at the table. Maybe, you know, she went to the bathroom 18 times during one meal. You know, I don't know why it didn't work out. But at the end of the night, you don't have to go home and just go crushed again. He didn't accept me. You just go home and go, well, that didn't work out, but thank God I'm accepted. That's a pretty important word. How about freedom? Some of you are so twisted up with stuff. Before you can join with somebody else, you got to get about 15 other people out of you somehow. You are so bent around and wound up. Hi, how are you? Good. It's a pretty important word. You get into a relationship that's supposed to be intimate, open, and free, and you find out the person that's in it with you has got padlocks on them. Freedom comes through Jesus. And to the power of the message of the cross of Christ. How about love? Value. Power. These are the things that come through the cross. And without them, our relationships are over before they start. Because you will look square at that person and go, she looks good enough. Or he drives the right kind of car enough, or he works at the right place enough, or knows the right people enough, or he treats me the right way enough, or she does this enough, or people will think this about enough, that I can get some value and some significance and some worth and some security and some love out of this whole deal. And that doesn't mean that man's not supposed to love his wife like Christ loved the church. This was the picture in the garden. Adam, Eve, this is the way it's going to work. I'm going to kill an animal and sacrifice that animal to cover your sins. Christ is going to come and he's going to be the ultimate sacrifice for you. Adam, that's a picture. Are you paying attention? That you are going to sacrifice your life for your helper and love her just like I'm loving you right now. Doesn't mean God doesn't want us loving each other and he doesn't want us exchanging affection and security and acceptance. It just means that we cannot find our home base in another person ever. And if you're waiting for the guy to come along who's going to give you all those things, you're going to be standing there waiting for a long, long time. And guys, if you're waiting for the girl to come along to give you that ultimate sense of security and acceptance, you're going to be waiting for a long, long time. That only comes from the Creator, the God who made you and who even in the garden said, I'm coming for you. All of me is more than enough for all of you. The last little piece of it's an application, and it's pretty simple if you're kind of tracking along, that your core value has got to be Jesus. And it's got to be a reconnection with the Creator and what he's about. That's what God wants for you. Forget about relationships. And some of you need a relationship hiatus. You're saying, please don't tell me that. I've had a relationship hiatus for long enough now. Now you need to just back off the relationship table and say, I don't need a guy and I don't need a girl. I don't need to date. I don't need that right now. I need to get reacquainted with the Creator God. And just tell your friends, I'm dating Jesus right now. And get on board with his purpose for your life. And here's the last little part tonight. And when that happens, you will begin to pray for and look for a man or a woman who shares your core value, which is God and his purpose for your life. Yeah, the New Testament says, it's an interesting passage. I think you know it by heart. All of us have heard it many, many times. This is the way it reads. Paul's letter to the Corinthians, he says, do not be yoked together with unbelievers. That's pretty out there. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? This is 2 Corinthians 6. What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? He lists another god of the day, an idol god. What does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. Just as God has said, I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. And so here's going to be, for non-believers tonight, and I'm sure there are a lot of you hanging out with us, the application is simple. The reconnection is not with her or him, it's with Creator God. But for believers here, the other application of this thing of pulling together or drifting apart is that some of us are trying to erase the economy of God and say, I know he's not where I am with God. I know she doesn't have the same spiritual temperature I have, but we're going to try to make it work. And God is saying marriage between a believer, passionate, connected to the Creator and the purposes of the Creator, full of Jesus and on the purposes of Jesus, cannot be joined together in a profitable long-term relationship with someone who does not get connected to the Creator, is not passionate about Creator's things, is not filled with Jesus and His life and His message and His hope and His love. Those two people don't work together. God is not judging non-believers when he says this. He's saying to non-believers, come and join up with the Creator. But what he's saying to the rest of us and to many of us, don't try to erase the economy of God and force the system, and don't believe that you're going to be the first couple on planet Earth that you're really following God and she's really not following God, but somehow it's all going to end up at the right place at the end of the day. For about 17 years now, I've been hanging out with young adults, college students, singles, and talking to a lot of them in relationships, and I've never yet come to a couple where he was a believer and she wasn't, and they fell in love. Why'd they fall in love, by the way? Because they had different standards. The guy I'm going to marry and the guy I date, those are two different guys. Now, I'm dating this guy and hanging out. We're just hanging out right now. We're just kind of hanging out, me and this guy right now. It's not like anything serious. We're just hanging out together. Now, I wouldn't marry this guy that I'm hanging out with, of course, because he's not like my married. The guy I'm going to marry, he's like a combination of Andy, my pastor, and Josh Hartnett, and he's got a little bit of the Apostle Paul rolled in there, and you know, he's this guy. Now, this guy over here is just a guy I'm hanging out with. Different standards for him. He's not really full on like into Jesus, but he's cool. I mean, he came to church once. Here's the problem, though. Something really amazing happens when you hang out with people, doesn't it? Sometimes you... What? Sometimes you... Thank you. Start liking them. That's backing it up a little bit. And after you start liking them for a little while, you... fall in love with him. And so here becomes the practical point. I would seriously consider never dating someone or hanging out, however you want to define it. If you want to get down in semantics and what does is mean and all that kind of stuff, you can play that game, you know, with your roommates and friends. I don't really want to get into that. They probably don't either, but you can go for it anyway. No, we're not really dating. We're just like hanging out. Well, I mean, we're not hanging out. We're just friends. Right. And whatever you call it, when the two of you start kind of getting in the same orbit, I wouldn't consider getting in the same orbit with anybody that you wouldn't think from the get-go, I can see in them that this is somebody I could marry. I'll tell you why. Because it's very likely that you could fall in love with them. And when you do, your emotions will scream far louder than the truth. And you will end up having an either-or argument. Either-or arguments are what people do who are trying to compromise, by the way. You and I are experts at it. At least I know I am. And when you're trying to compromise, you say something like, well, I know he's not a Christian, but what do you want me to do? Sit at home for the rest of my life by myself? Oh, are those the two options we're down to now? It's either go out with him, he's not a believer, does not know Jesus, is not passionate about the kingdom, or sit at home every weekend for the rest of my life. That's what you do when you're a high school kid, by the way, to your mom and dad. So, it's either this or it's this. And it's like, no, there's like a lot of things in the middle. But you'll end up with one of those compromised either-or arguments at the end of the day, and you'll end up sitting over coffee with your friend saying, I know, but it's different. It's going to be different this time. And I would like to tell you tonight that it's not going to be different. That in the end, you're going to see that that little bitty space that doesn't look too insurmountable today, as the weeks and months and years of your relationship begin to roll by, is going to just start taking you on divergent paths. And in time, you're going to find that you are not only not together, but that you have moved farther apart than you could have ever dreamed. Maybe you're here tonight and you're a believer, you're following God and you really love Him. But somehow you're falling into an orbit with a girl or a guy that doesn't get it spiritually, but somehow your heart's in it. And I'm just encouraging you tonight to not erase the board of the economy of God and find some friends who will come around and support you of making a very strong move tonight and saying to this person, I'm out. I'm out. Why? Because I can't marry you. Why? Because we do not have the same core value. If Jesus is the center of the garden, then He becomes the center of us. If He's the center of me, He's got to be the center of you if we're going to be a we. You say, well, Louis, wait, here's the big argument. So let me just put it on the table, save you time telling to your friends tonight over dinner because y'all are going to Chili's. And you're going to say, yeah, but I know Louis said that, but here it comes. And here's what you're going to say to them. But He's so close. He came to the Easter service. The other day we were riding in the car and I had the Passion CD in and He actually didn't make me take it out right away. I told Him I go to 722 and He said, well, that's cool. If that's what you need to do, that's fine. And you know what? I'm afraid. I'm telling your story. Save you the time. Just say what He said. I'm afraid that if I pull out of the relationship, that the opportunity for Him to hear about Jesus will be gone. Because I'm the only Christian He really knows. And He trusts me. And I think we're close. So I'm going to hang in here a little longer and fall deeper in love. Because I'm the only option God's got to lead Him to the cross. Well, a whole bunch of you are laughing and somebody's going. Don't tell me what I already know. I hear that in the core of my heart. I hear it beating and echoing down in the deep part of where I am. This is not going to work. This is not going to work. This is not God's plan. This was not what God was thinking when He was thinking about my marriage. God was thinking about somebody I could kneel down with and pray. God was thinking about somebody that would open these pages and say, honey, check this out. God was thinking about somebody that would say occasionally, you know, I know it sounds far-fetched and crazy, but let's go for it, knowing that God is with us. And you've settled for so much less than that. Because you fell in love. And you've got to ask God to give you the grace and some people around you to put the brakes on and say, you know what? You don't know Christ now, and you can't be more lost than that. So I'm going to have to back out of the relationship. And I pray that you find Him. But let me ask you this question. Do you really want to marry somebody? You say, then maybe just somebody in here. We're just hanging out a minute for, so bear with me. They're teetering in that balance right now. But do you really want to marry somebody that said yes to Jesus because that was the prerequisite before saying I do to you? Is that what you want to do? And wonder for the rest of your life, did they do that for me? Or did they do that because they saw Jesus and they couldn't do anything else? The best thing you can do for a non-Christian, if you're in an orbit and falling in love, is to get out of the relationship and say to them, I loved you, and I probably love you now, but you need far more than me, bro. And I am clogging up the way right now for you to get to God, because you think you need me and you don't see that you need him. So I'm out of here because I love you. And not, I'm going to give you 3 weeks and I'm going to keep sending you emails with scripture verses on them. And when you pray the prayer, email me back and let me know and we'll dive back in. Because I'm telling you, that guy is going to pray that prayer. I mean, if you put it down on those terms, 8 out of 10 guys are going to say, all right, what is it? They're going to show up at 7:22 and do the deal. And in your heart, you'll wonder. And then in time, after the I do comes and the hard part of marriage begins to happen and the hard part of the relationship begins to happen, and now it's not a day later or 6 months later, but it's 6 years later, you'll see the gulf open up. And sooner or later, you'll have a conversation that goes like this. You know, I never really believed in that in the first place. And you'll be stuck in a relationship with somebody that you cannot be equally yoked with all the days of your life. So to have a relationship where you're pulling together, and that's what we're going to talk about these next few weeks. Next week we're talking about all the baggage, all the stuff inside of us. It's called Still Dating Dad next week, and we're going to kind of look inside, and it's going to be kind of a little bit not so fun to open up and see what's making us tick. But God has to open that part of us so that he can heal us and send us forward. But how do you pull together and not drift apart? How many marriages in America tonight do you think are pulling together? How many marriages in America tonight do you think are drifting apart? And God is saying, I got a plan for you. So Louis, that was great. You left us with, we can't date non-Christians. So that eliminated like a lot of the cute guys I know. So they're out. But I can stay home and watch The Bachelor Thursday night. So I got that going for me still. I think our plan of attack, your plan of attack, because I don't have this plan of attack now, but your plan of attack is to make God the main thing and go after him with all your heart and never stop. You say, Louis, I did that and I've done that. And I thought if I did that for 3 years, then he'd say, cha-ching, but I've been doing that and it didn't cha-ching. So thank you. You know what? I'm not saying that might not be true. I'm just saying if that person really did go after God for 3 years and there wasn't a cha-ching, they'd say, you know, I wish there had been the cha-ching, but there was a pretty cool ride going after God with all my heart for 3 years. He's pretty on. And I'm still hoping there's a cha-ching down there, because I do believe God made me for a woman or made me for a man, and I'm eager for that moment in my life. But I'm making going after God my priority until I see Jesus. Even after the cha-ching. And if you do that, if I do that, we're going to be right where God wants us to be. And it is his job to bring you the woman. It is his responsibility as general manager of the universe to bring you the man. It is our responsibility to respond to his open arms and to run after him. And as Jesus said, love him with all of our heart and all of our soul and all of our mind and all of our strength. You may not be married to Bob yet, but you're already married to God, and that's pretty cool. In the meantime, Lord, thank you for giving us a plan. And a lot of us in this room tonight have tried to, in a lot of different ways, reconfigure your idea. And there are people in here all through this night where stuff just hit way too close to the core. They thought that intimacy and sex was going to make the relationship stronger, and in turn it just basically was a countdown to the termination of the relationship. They thought they could find in a man what they're only going to find in a woman, or find in a woman what they're only going to find in a man. And they love you, but they've been struggling with that and trying to reorder the order, and it's just not working out down in the core of who they are. And Lord, there are a lot of people looking for the right mate. And tonight I believe that you open their eyes to see the Maker. That ultimately it's not a frantic search for a mate, but it's a falling in love with the Maker of all things. And Lord, I pray for every unbeliever here, a bold prayer, that tonight you would draw them to you and say to them personally tonight, I made a covering for your sin and shame when Jesus Christ died for you. And forgiveness, acceptance, freedom, love, they are yours tonight in the cross of Jesus Christ. Come and get them. Come and be born again. Come and be connected to the God who made you. And Lord, I pray that you just draw them. And Lord, I'm praying tonight for a woman that's sitting in here and her friends looked down the row and winked at her when we begin to tell her story. I know, I know, I know, I know, but this time it's going to be different. He's different. God's going to do something. I think it's going to work out. And Lord, I pray that you just settle on her with great strength tonight to rest in you and to walk away from what could never be, all that you've dreamed of for her to be. And Lord, for a man that's in here tonight and she said yes and he went for it, and somewhere along the way it deflated his passion for you and she became an idol, and now he worships her far more than you. And I pray that you just give him the grace not to judge or condemn her, but to just be honest about himself and to say to her, you know, I'm sorry, but I need to go after God with all my heart. And Lord, mostly tonight I pray for people who've thought the window of opportunity has passed them by, that you just whisper to them tonight, I'm thinking about your future. Trust me, I'm still thinking about your future. And I want to do what is very, very best for you. And they just be able to hang in there, Lord, in this weird waiting, and not go out and do something insane, but they could just hang in there and wait until you bring them the man, until you, Lord, bring them the woman.